He opened the lid and booted it up. Jay soon followed and stood next to him. You plan on accessing it through Tor? I'm impressed, Aaron began, and a little surprised you're still at least somewhat up to speed on things. I do work in cybersecurity. Right, security, he chuckled. The Onion Router isn't something you'd use on a daily basis, but yeah, that's the best way for me to go in unseen. It will route me through servers all over the world and go through several random relay nodes, so it can be slow as shit, but it'll keep me anonymous. And I can see what kind of system they've got. Jay checked the time. How long you think this'll take? Don't know. You in some kind of rush? Just wanted to get back home before the missus arrived. Aaron continued typing commands into his laptop, swerving and dodging usual internet protocols until reaching his final destination, Nova Investments' email server. What's the guy's name? Tom Neville, Jay began. His email address is tneville@novainc.com. Aaron typed in a few more commands, and in a flash, a screen with several emails appeared on his laptop. I'm in. What are we looking for here? Anything relating to me specifically, or Argus Solutions in general. Jay widened his stance and folded his arms, waiting for the evidence of Tom Neville's deceit. Once he could prove they ran an illegal background check on Lacey, or him for that matter, he would take it up with his manager. And if it meant Owen was aware, he could lose his commission and probably his job. Aaron ran a search to include the criteria, and several emails were highlighted. Jay leaned in to get a better look. With his index finger, he pointed to one. Can you open that up? A single click was all it took to reveal what Jay had already suspected, except that there was something more. What the hell? He looked to Aaron. Am I reading that right? Aaron looked over his shoulder at Jay. I think you got a situation here, man. Chapter 4 Exhaust from his idling car drifted forward to the driver's side and caught Jay's eye. He glanced at the white, steamy cloud as it floated by, pondering what he'd just seen at Aaron's place. He looked to the passenger seat where his carrier bag rested. Inside was a flash drive that contained the damaging evidence. Aaron copied the emails onto the drive for him to use as he saw fit. Problem was, Jay didn't know what was fit for him to do. His phone was propped up inside one of the cup holders in the center console. Jay wanted to call Lacey, but he knew she was busy with work. Not only that, he couldn't be sure what to say to her in any case. He needed to think about this. The information would be scandalous and would cost Argus Solutions dearly, meaning it would also cost Jay and his family dearly. The company would lose most, if not all, of its clients, and Jay would definitely lose his job, even if he had not been the one responsible. He would still have to account for how he received the information. Tom Neville was running background checks on everyone at Argus. That alone wasn't the cause for Jay's distress. It was that Neville had inside help from Argus, help that not only allowed them to conduct such reprehensible invasions of privacy against the staff, but also Nova's competitors, including the Dalian Corporation, his own client. And now Jay had a choice to make, one that would require in-depth consideration for all the lives that would be affected by his disclosure. He pulled the gear shift into drive and headed onto the highway. He needed time to think, time to be alone and consider his course of action. A sign ahead grew larger as Jay drew nearer. 20 minutes from home. He knew this sign and had passed it almost every single day. Fairfax Fashion Square, the largest mall in the country, and it happened to be owned by Nova Investments. The idea that he needed to go there burrowed in his mind. Perhaps an answer would come to him if he stood inside their flagship mall. Or maybe it was just that he needed more time before bringing the situation to Lacey's attention. The exit ramp approached and he veered right. The massive retail mall sat on over 150 acres of prime Virginia real estate. It was a relic of a business model struggling to survive in the digital age. Perhaps gaining insight into the plans of their competitors was the reason Neville and Ballard took it upon themselves to commit what amounted to corporate espionage in Jay's mind. The main entrance was just ahead, and Jay pulled into the nearest parking spot. He stared at the backlit sign, beautifully crafted in iron and masonry, elegant in its enormity. What could he do? A deep breath and his eyelids fell shut for a moment. He would clear his head from thoughts of losing his job and taking down a company to which he owed so much. His status, his money, all of it was owed to Argus Solutions. Jay stepped out of his car into the tempered early evening air and squinted at the fading sun. He still had some time before Lacey would be home, and he would buy her something nice, something that might soften the blow when the time came. And who knew if he would have the money to buy her anything nice again? He pressed the remote to lock his Mercedes. As he watched the headlights flash, signaling that it was now secure, he realized just how much debt they were in. It hadn't occurred to him before because the money flowed into their bank account with increasing speed. But how easily that could all change if the spigot was turned off. Jay arrived inside the great marbled entrance that showcased a sophisticated space full of high-end retailers, the likes that could be found along Rodeo Drive. He hoisted his carrier bag high on his shoulder as it began to slip from his suit jacket and walked toward the jewelers. He would get Lacey something nice.
"Good evening, sir. May I help you?"
A slender, attractive young woman with billowing curls of jet-black hair stood poised behind the glass counter. "Yes, thanks. I was looking for a pair of diamond earrings for my wife."
"Of course, right over here."
Jay followed alongside the woman and noticed her blouse puckered a little at her breasts, revealing a tantalizing black bra beneath. He quickly averted his eyes to avoid detection.
"I have a pair of lovely 2-carat-each round-cut earrings with exquisite clarity right here."
And she went right for the jugular. Jay looked at the large diamond earrings and noted there was no price tag, and remembered the saying that if one had to ask, then one couldn't afford. Still, what did it matter right now? Everything was about to change, and if he wanted to get Lacey these much too expensive earrings, what difference could it make? She deserved something beautiful, and he knew that lately they'd begun to drift apart, both so busy with work, neither trying particularly hard to make a course correction. "I'll take them." A smile appeared as he withdrew a credit card from his wallet.
"So these are for your wife?"
Coquettish, to say the least, and it was a feature she could easily produce. "Yes."
"Anniversary gift?"
"No. Just a nice surprise, I hope." Jay signed the receipt and collected the bag with the box that cradled the $8,000 earrings.
"I'm sure she'll be thrilled, sir. Have a lovely evening."
Jay tilted his head in acknowledgement and began to leave the store. With his carrier bag still on his shoulder, he unzipped the side flap and tucked the bag inside. He stopped and turned to his left. A Starbucks was just ahead, and he needed good, strong coffee right now. Making his way further inside the mall, Jay noticed how busy it was, then recalled that it was a Friday night and a clear evening. That might account for the heavy foot traffic that he was now forced to navigate for a coffee he considered might not be worth the effort. It was in that moment Jay began to hear raised voices in the distance. People looked past him and turned their shoulders because they'd heard it too. He raised to his tiptoes for a better view and could see nothing except more people. Some were beginning to run toward him. Jay's pulse climbed quickly, and his head grew light when he began to decipher the words coming from those who were running.
"Bomb! There's a bomb! Run!"
A man whose face was white and glistened with panic rushed past Jay. Terror began to erupt around him. People screamed and ran, dropping their bags. Some grabbed their children's hands, some froze in place. Jay was one of those people. His feet wouldn't move, though he tried with all his strength.
"Run, Jay! You have to run!"
The voice in his head demanded he run. But Jay noticed a boy. He was alone and crying. No one was stopping to help, and God only knew where his parents were. He had to get the boy. Except the boy was deeper inside the chaos, closer to this bomb they shouted about. But Jay couldn't let him die. The boy looked to be the same age as his own son. The bag slipped from his shoulder and fell to the ground, and Jay ran to the crying child. People began to trample and kick the bag. No matter now, he had to save this child, and crucial seconds were passing, and there was no time to worry about material things. He reached the boy and swept him up into his arms. "I've got you. It's okay." Jay turned to run again when the sound of the explosion pierced his ears. The heat and energy from the blast propelled them several feet, smashing them into the wall of the elevator. They fell to the ground. His body felt like it was on fire, but he didn't see any flames. The boy was still beneath his arm. Jay didn't know if he was alive. He wasn't sure he was even alive, except that the sounds around him still filled his head. The screams. Smoke lingered in the air above him, thick and black. Jay was fading fast, and as he looked down, he realized his injuries might prove too much. Blood pooled all around them, but he couldn't be sure if it was from him or the boy. Perhaps it was both. His vision darkened, and his eyes closed. Lacey held Jay's hand as he lay on the gurney, still unconscious. The doctors and nurses pushed the gurney along the corridor until they reached the operating room.
"Ma'am, you'll need to stay here. I'll have one of the nurses give you an update as soon as we know something."
She stared at Jay's battered and burned face and had only just arrived as they began to prepare him for surgery. They thought they'd stop the bleeding, but his abdomen swelled and turned purple. They had to open him up now.
"Ma'am, I need you to step aside, please,"
the doctor said. Lacey released his hand and Jay's fingers slipped through hers. They disappeared behind the doors while she stood helpless, until startled by hands that grabbed her shoulders.
"Why don't you come with me, ma'am? I'll show you to the waiting room."
A petite nurse with a compassionate face led Lacey to the waiting room. She was not alone. The hospital was overtaken by casualties from the explosion. The faces around her revealed the devastation. Swollen eyes, stained cheeks, shocked expressions. And they were all waiting to hear of their loved ones, just as she was. Lacey lowered herself onto the chair and turned her head up to the television. The dark skies made it difficult to see the full breadth of damage, but the fire still burned, and red and blue lights flashed at the scene. News reporters were broadcasting live, while the anchors tried to find words to convey the destruction. "We don't know how long it will take the firefighters to put out the blaze," one reporter on the scene began. "And as you can see behind me, they've set up a triage for the injured. Mark, back to you at the studio." She turned away from the television. It was surreal, and she had to remind herself that it was really happening, and it wasn't just a nightmare. Lacey worked with the probability of a terrorist attack on a daily basis, though the officials hadn't uttered those words yet. But it never occurred to her that it could happen here, just down the road a few miles from her home. When the news first broke, only minutes after the explosion, Lacey had just arrived home. An alert sounded on her phone, and she immediately dialed Jay's line, but he didn't answer. Nor did he answer his office line, and she became worried. He had no reason to be at the mall, and she tried to remember that. But when she called again, still with no answer, she began to fear the worst. The app on her phone would tell her his last known location, and so she tried it. The little blue blip on the map showed he'd been at the mall. She didn't know how much time passed from that moment until now. Celeste safeguarded the children, making sure they hadn't seen what had happened on the news. Lacey insisted they not know anything of it until she could find Jay and be sure he was all right. The logical step was to come here, to this hospital. It was the closest to the mall, and after some time wasted trying to gain the attention of someone who could help, she managed to pull a nurse aside and beg for her assistance. The hospital was manic as people arrived one after the other with various injuries, some severe, some minor. The nurse checked the computer system and Jay's name had not come up.
"Please, can you just check the ER?" Lacey had asked. "He has to be here."
The nurse had found him and now Jay was in surgery, and she had no idea if he would pull through.
"Mrs. Merrick."
A doctor entered the room and all eyes shifted to him until he called for Lacey. Their collective disappointment was all too apparent.
"I'm Mrs. Merrick."
Lacey rose from her chair and her heart leapt into her throat.
"Is my husband okay?"
The doctor pulled her aside.
"Your husband has suffered extensive internal damage. His spleen has been removed along with part of his liver. The force of the blast..."
He trailed off for a moment.
"They've managed to stop the bleeding, but it's very touch and go right now."
Lacey raised her hand to her mouth in shock.
"Can I see him, please?"
"I'm afraid he's not awake, Mrs. Merrick, and it may be a while."
The doctor glanced into the corridor.
"I'm sorry, ma'am, but I need to get back. There are still many people who need my help."
Lacey's blank stare finally broke as she nodded to the doctor. All she could do now was wait.
"Mrs. Merrick?"
Lacey opened her eyes, which had grown swollen with tears, and blinked a few times as they cleared to see the nurse standing in front of her.
"Is Jay awake?"
She lowered her legs to the floor and sat upright.
"Yes, you can see him now."
To hear that he was alive made her heart sore. Lacey followed the nurse to the ICU recovery area. The chaos had settled, but people were still being brought in, and Lacey hadn't a clue as to how long she'd been there. The nurse pulled back the curtain.
"Just a few minutes, okay? He needs to rest."
Lacey nodded.
"Thank you."
She turned to see Jay wrapped in bandages with wires sticking out of him. He was in bad shape, but he was alive.
"Hi, baby." The tears spilled as she spoke.
I'm okay. His tone was soft and quiet, hardly noticeable. Don't cry. This only made her cry harder.
What were you doing at the mall, sweetheart?
She didn't know why she asked that question, because none of it mattered. Her husband was here and he was alive.
Never mind. I'm just happy to hear your voice and look into your eyes.
She reached for his hand. What about the boy?
What boy, honey?
The boy I tried to save. His bandaged face twitched as his eyes squinted with pain.
I don't know, but I'll try to find out.
How many dead?
Last update was 234. Lots of people injured.
She shook her head.
I just can't believe you were there. I'm so grateful you're alive.
He tried to sit up, but hardly moved an inch. I need my bag.
Lie down, baby. You're not supposed to be moving.
She began to search around his bed and the chair next to him, but saw none of his personal belongings.
I don't know where they put your things, but there's nothing you should be worrying about right now, okay? Please, just try to rest.
I need my bag.
Jay lifted his head, but the pain was too great, and it shot across his face. The monitors began to beep quickly. Honey, please. I'm sure they've got it somewhere. You shouldn't be moving.
Lacey knew he always kept his laptop bag with him, but couldn't figure out why he needed it so badly right now.
Who is this boy? Do you know his name?
She tried to divert his attention for his own good. No, he was alone. I tried. He cringed again.
Okay. You don't need to explain now.
She placed her hand on his chest.
Just relax.
The monitors weren't slowing. In fact, they were growing louder. Lacey began to look for a nurse.
Hey, is there anyone here who can help?
Her voice was shaky as she leaned beyond the curtain.
Hello? We need some help in here.
The beep sounding from the monitor turned flat. Lacey spun back and looked at Jay. His eyes had closed.
Jay? Honey?
Panic charged through her as she turned to the opening in the curtain again.
Help! Please, someone help!
Two nurses ran to her and pushed their way inside the tiny space.
Please step aside, ma'am,
one of the nurses spoke.
Page Dr. Hines now.
Lacey stepped back as the nurses worked, shouting codes and numbers and things she didn't understand. Her body shuddered as she watched them work.
Crash cart,
the nurse yelled. A doctor soon rushed inside, rolling a device that Lacey recognized from television shows. Paddles in an electronic box. A defibrillator, she thought it was called.
Can someone get her out of here? The doctor demanded.
Ma'am, let's step outside so the doctor can do what he needs to do.
One of the nurses pushed Lacey back.
No, that's my husband in there. Please, I need to stay.
Ma'am, let them do their job, please. Lacey's eyes raced back and forth as she stared at the curtain that was now closed.
Please, please, God, don't let him die.
The nurse still held on to her so she wouldn't push inside, which she most certainly would have done if given the chance. Now all she could hear were commands being shouted by the doctor, metal things dropping to the floor, nurses responding to the orders. It was too much. He was supposed to be okay. They said he just needed rest. They said more than that, but she didn't want to hear it. And now this was happening.
Time of death, 11:34 p.m.
The words came from someone behind the curtain. The nurse turned to Lacey.
I'm so sorry, ma'am. If you'll come with me.
She began to usher her out of the area.
No, I have to see him. Please.
Lacey began to break away from the nurse's grip.
You can't. Not right now. They'll come and get you soon, I promise.
She again took hold of Lacey's arms.
Please, we have to go now.
Resigned, Lacey followed the nurse out of the room. She was in shock, having just spoken to her husband only moments ago. And now he was gone. The victim of what was presumed a terrorist attack. An attack that she should have prevented.
My husband asked about his bag, Lacey began. Can I get his belongings, please?
She needed something of his to hold. Something that would smell like him. Something that he touched. This couldn't be the end. He couldn't have left her.
Just have a seat in here and I'll go find out where his things are.
Again, I'm so sorry, ma'am. Lacey was alone in a room occupied by other victims' families. As she glanced at the television mounted on the wall, she saw that the fires had been all but extinguished,
but smoke soared in the night sky. It was approaching midnight, and Lacey had just lost her best friend and the father of her children.
Chapter 5.
The order had come down only hours after the explosion, and in the middle of the night, amid the smoldering ashes of the bomb's aftermath, a task force had been formed. Michelle Vogel was among the members of this new task force, and now held a paper cup brimming with stale coffee to her lips while she sat down at the conference table at headquarters. The coalition, which included her team, was responsible for collecting and reporting, and field agents, who were responsible for tactical and strategic analysis. The Bureau was no stranger to conflicts between civilian support staff and agents. The FBI's Directorate of Intelligence was formed in 2005 after the 9/11 Review Commission reports, and still had not been fully assimilated or recognized by the law enforcement side of the agency. But this time, as shock was still setting in, a harmony between the two sides arose. Among those present were representatives from multiple FBI field offices who specialized in counterterrorism. One such agent was a man by the name of Will Kaysen. In only his second year at the Bureau, Will had shown great promise and, as such, had been removed from probationary status just months ago, slightly ahead of the usual two-year time frame. Will came from the Louisville field office and sat next to his supervisory special agent, Gabe Mendez, who was a highly experienced agent and had been involved in dismantling several terrorist plots since 9/11. Movement in the corridor caught Michelle's eye, and she spotted Lacey walking past. The meeting had already commenced, but she immediately pushed up from the table while SSA Mendez was speaking. "Excuse me for a moment, please." Michelle pushed open the glass door and jogged to catch up with her. "Hey, what are you doing here?" She placed her hand on Lacey's shoulder. "You didn't need to come in. We've got this. How's Jay doing?" Lacey stopped cold and turned to face Michelle. "He's gone." "Oh, God. I'm so sorry. Last we spoke, he'd just come out of surgery. There were complications." Michelle closed her eyes and turned away for a moment. "Then you really shouldn't be here, Lacey. Look at you. You're exhausted, and you should be with your family, your children. The kids, they don't know yet. I just couldn't. Not yet." She inhaled a deep breath. "I couldn't go home. I didn't know where else to go." "You've been up all night? What can I do? How can I help?" Lacey looked past her toward the conference room. "Who's in there?" "We're part of a new task force. The D.C. field office, Richmond, Norfolk, and agents from the U.S. Joint Terrorism Task Force in Louisville." "Do they know anything yet? Do they know who did this?" Lacey's eyes reddened, but she squeezed them shut to squelch her emotions. "No, no one's claimed responsibility. Not yet. Right now, we're just beginning to gather information. I brought up the Baltimore findings. Everyone seems confident it's linked to this." Michelle's face masked in sympathy. "Lacey, please go home. There's nothing you can do here. Everyone is pulling double duty to find out who's responsible. He tried to save a boy." A tender smile played on her lips for just a moment. "I don't know who the boy was or if he survived, but Jay tried to save him. He was a good man, Lacey." "Yes, he was." She looked again toward the conference room. "Who's the field agent in charge? I need to collect Jay's things, but the hospital says they don't have them. Maybe someone found them at the site. If you'd like, if you think it would help, you can sit in on this, just to get a sense of where this investigation is headed. You don't need to sit at the table, and you won't have to speak. I'll just introduce you as the regional supervisor." So they'd given her the promotion after all. What the hell did it matter now? But Lacey wasn't ready to go home. She couldn't face her children, and she couldn't face herself. Because if it turned out she missed something... Another glance toward the people in the room, and she decided maybe sitting in on the meeting would help. Maybe burying herself in work was what she needed right now, hours after becoming a widow. Michelle pressed her hand gently against Lacey's back and led her through the corridor and into the conference room where it appeared there were some intense discussions. The eyes of the entire room fell upon the two as they entered. "Pardon the interruption again," Michelle began. "I just wanted to be sure our regional supervisor was included." She turned to Lacey. "This is Lacey Merrick, and she'll just be observing." Lacey nodded to the others in the room and took a seat in a chair that rested against the side wall. Their faces suggested she hadn't done a very good job of hiding her emotions.
Pity spread over each of them as they knew what had happened.
As I was saying, SSA Mendez continued, our first priority should be reviewing the data, which your team will provide, Miss Vogel, and for operations to conclude whether the device is tied to the spare remote found in Baltimore.
Do you believe this was a lone wolf attack? Lacey interrupted.
We don't know anything yet, but from the latest briefing, a vehicle was found near the mall's east entrance that was parked alongside the front of the Macy's store. They're working on identifying an owner. As I said, our priority is to collect as much information as we can to determine who might be responsible, whether it's domestic or international terrorism. Several survivors have stated they heard people screaming the word bomb, so while an accident hasn't been ruled out yet, we still have to consider that remote possibility.
Are you all right, ma'am?
Agent Kaysen seemed to notice Lacey's eyes begin to water once again.
Ms. Merritt suffered the loss of a loved one in the explosion. Michelle eyed Lacey with concern.
Forgive my interruption. Please continue. Lacey cleared her throat and steadied her sentiments. Kaysen's brow furrowed.
I'm very sorry, ma'am. I can't imagine what you must be going through right now. Perhaps it would be best if we continue?
Mendez was impatient, bordering on callous, but there was no time for compassion. At the meeting's conclusion, the team rose from the seats and conversation filled the room. As Lacey began to leave, Agent Kaysen approached.
I just wanted to say again how sorry I am for your loss. Is there anything I can do for you?
Thank you, Agent. She wandered into the office with no real intentions except to avoid going home, but then recalled a reason. Actually, yes. There is something you might be able to do. Do you know who I could speak to regarding any personal belongings that may have been found on the scene?
I'm sorry, personal belongings? Yours?
No, my husband's. Shortly before... She paused. He lost his laptop bag in the aftermath. Do you know who I could speak to about it, assuming it's found intact? It's just, well, all of our personal information was on it.
I'll check with my SSA. He has the ops contact. I haven't been out there yet, but we'll be heading out in a while, when there's enough light. Is there a number where I can reach you if someone knows anything about it?
Yes. Lacey pulled a pen from her purse and tore off a scratched piece of paper from Will's notebook and wrote down her cell number. Thank you again, Agent Kaysen.
Of course. And please call me Will.
I'm Lacey. Thank you, Will.
Nova Investments' U.S. Chief Operating Officer was set to make a statement to the press. He stood outside of the once majestic retail mall that wasn't much more than a pile of rubble amid charred remnants of various retail items. Tom Neville watched from the comfort of his office at the local Nova division in Fairfax. He poured himself a scotch, neat, before walking to the large flat screen mounted on his wall. Neville scarcely considered the impact this might have on the company, how it might keep shoppers away out of fear. Of course, he was head of cybersecurity, and nothing in his job description would have prevented this tragedy, an exoneration he felt was necessary to divine. The press conference was about to begin. COO, Chief Operating Officer, David Hogan, was flanked by what Neville believed must have been the top guys with the FBI. Their cheap suits were a dead giveaway. He tossed back the rest of his drink and listened as his boss offered words of condolences to the families of the victims. We will be fitting metal detectors at every entrance of every one of our retail outlets, Hogan went on to say. Neville believed this was merely a measure to appease a nervous public, because if a terrorist wanted in, metal detectors weren't going to keep him out. He knew the schematics of that particular building, and there were flaws, many flaws that would expose all of their malls to the same risks. Still, it was something that the architects would have to deal with. His ringing cell phone caught his attention and he returned to his desk. Tom Neville, he paused.
Yeah, I'm watching it now. He glanced back at the television.
What?
Are you shitting me?
Jesus. Neville lowered his glass.
No, no one told me.
I should call Ballard and see how he's doing. Those guys at Argus must be devastated.
The man on the other end continued while Neville looked on.
I wasn't a fan of his, but I'm sorry as hell the guy died. I'd better go. Thanks for the heads up.
He ended the call and immediately pressed Owen Ballard's contact information. The line rang, but there was no answer. Neville considered driving to the Argus offices, but thought that they might either be closed or not in the mood to entertain clients.
Damn.
The news was distressing, and he wanted to speak with Owen, especially considering that he and Jay Merrick were friends.
but perhaps Owen would feel guilty about helping Neville. He began to consider the possibility that Owen's guilt over something for which he had no control might make him reconsider their arrangement. That was something he couldn't allow to happen. Owen stood on the balcony of his bedroom overlooking the exclusive golf course that was almost empty. It was Saturday morning and the course should have been heaving with people, especially during this time of year when the weather was warm enough in the mornings. But instead, people stayed home glued to their televisions, watching the constant and overwhelming coverage of the explosion most of the media outlets had already deemed to be an act of terrorism. His manager, Scott, phoned early this morning and told him about Jay. He expected the call would have come from Lacey, since they were all friends, but he knew she didn't like him and couldn't blame her. Julianne approached and reached for his shoulder.
"Hey, you all right?"
Owen turned to face her. "No, I'm not." He returned to the view ahead and waited for her to leave. It wasn't supposed to turn out like this. None of this was supposed to happen. Jay was supposed to be with him yesterday afternoon, and for some goddamn reason he was at the mall instead. He went back inside and sat on the edge of his bed. Stone-faced, Owen picked up his cell phone, which rested on the nightstand. "I did as you asked." Owen waited for a response. "He was supposed to go golfing with me, but he canceled." "He was out of the office, and that was what we needed. You did your job," the man on the other end replied.
"Yeah. He was out of the office, all right. He was at the fucking mall. What the hell was he doing there?"
"Only he could have answered that question, Mr. Ballard. I am sorry for your loss, but this changes nothing. And in fact, it seems you have the opportunity you need now. I suggest you don't wait any longer." Owen dropped his head into his hand.
"Right. I'll take care of it."
He ended the call and tossed the phone onto his bed.
"Fucking asshole."
"It's only a matter of time before the FBI connects Basara to you. They already have the fragments of the remote that were so carelessly left behind in his shop."
"That would be impossible. I removed the video surveillance files before I left. There's no record of my ever having been in his shop."
Ferran's killer stood in front of the man who was his superior. "And what was left behind at the mall?" the man asked as he sat with his elbows resting on his desk.
"Nothing, I promise you."
"The car will remain untraceable to you?"
"Yes, it will trace back to Basara, just as we planned, and that will lead them back to Bahrain. Our involvement will remain undetected."
"Well, time will tell, won't it? And for your sake, I pray you are right." A dismissive wave of his hand meant the discussion was over. Lacey held her children close as they huddled on the sofa. Her blouse was now stained with their tears as she told them their father wasn't coming home again, but that he would be with God, always watching over them. She stroked their lovely shiny hair as they rested against her, spent from overwhelming grief. Celeste approached gingerly.
"Do you need anything at all, dear?"
"No, I'm fine," Lacey whispered. "You should go to bed. It's so late. You must be exhausted."
"Okay, I'll go off to bed then."
Celeste reached for the throw that rested on the side chair and placed it over the three of them. Her eyes welled and her chin quivered.
"Good night, sweetheart."
A knock at the door brought Lacey out of her sleep. She felt as though it must have been only minutes, but on examination, she noticed light had emerged inside the family room. It was already dawn. The knock sounded again. Lacey carefully wrangled from beneath the still sleeping children and walked to the front door. The sun was only just appearing over the horizon, and when she opened the door, a man stood before her, cast in a hazy gray shadow. He stepped forward and came into view.
"Oh my God, Lacey. I'm so sorry."
Owen offered an embrace. She reeled back at his unexpected arrival.
"What are you doing here? What time is it?"
Owen made his way inside.
"It's 6:30. I'm so sorry, but I just had to see you. I had to know that you were doing all right."
Lacey closed the door.
"I'm not."
She brushed past him to the kitchen.
"Can I get you some coffee?"
She began to scoop coffee into the machine.
"And as you can imagine, I haven't had much sleep."
Owen glanced into the family room and noticed the kids still sleeping. He hung his head for a moment before finally reaching the kitchen and pulling up a seat at the breakfast bar.
"I just can't believe it,"
Owen, I'm not really up for visitors right now. Did you need something? It was all she could do to keep from melting to the floor in tears, and to have to suffer this intrusion set her mind to anger.
Of course you're not. How could I be so insensitive? It's just I've been up all night watching the news. I got the call about Jay yesterday morning, and I just didn't know what to do.
I called Scott shortly after I left the hospital to let him know. She placed a cup of coffee in front of him.
Thank you.
Owen took a sip.
I'm sorry to barge in here like this. I guess I was just caught up and I needed to see you.
He looked back toward the family room.
How are the kids?
He whispered. As well as can be expected. They just lost their father. Lacey realized her tone was harsh, but did little to hide the fact. His eyes dropped to the floor.
I shouldn't have come in, especially so early. I'm so sorry, Lacey.
He looked her in the eye.
We just had lunch the other day, celebrating my signing a new client.
Nova Investments.
Yes, that's right. He told you?
She nodded.
I admire Jay so much, Lacey. Please know that.
Owen began to rise.
I'm just so grateful you and the kids will be okay. Financially, I mean.
Lacey regarded his comment. Those are things I'll worry about later, but not today. I need to start making funeral arrangements for my husband.
Please let me know if I can do anything, anything at all for you and the kids. Julianne's always around, too, so please don't hesitate. I mean that.
Owen began to leave. Thank you for coming by. I'm sorry I'm not more hospitable. He stopped and turned back.
It's me who's sorry, Lacey.
He paused, as though he was about to continue, but instead moved toward the foyer. Lacey allowed him to show himself out. She sipped on her coffee and considered his final remark, a crass statement about their financial security. What right did he have to bring up such a thing barely a day after Jay's death? He had no personal knowledge of their finances. What business was it of his anyway? Her anger mounted and her jaw clenched. Perhaps she was overreacting. Lack of sleep and grief and confusion. All these things muddled in her head. But she hated the way Owen was always concerned with money, mentioning the cost of things in passing, driving up in a new car to show off to Jay. She couldn't have cared less, and Jay felt the same. And here he was again, talking about money to her at a time like this. Her thoughts turned to Jay as they sat on the couch the night before her world collapsed, the conversation they'd had, and how dismissive she had been of his concerns. Nova Investments. Owen was the one to mention them only moments ago, and how he'd signed them. The same company that Jay believed had been conducting background checks on the two of them. She peered through the kitchen window and looked upon an empty street. If they had indeed collected information, which could include banking, and Owen was so certain Jay had left them financially secure, was Owen aware of their actions?
Chapter 6. The city's air was still thick with the trail of ash and death. Owen could smell it as he drove through the extraordinarily quiet streets to the offices of Nova Investments. It was as though Fairfax had been deserted. The governor declared a state of emergency and asked those in the area who could stay at home to do so until the end of the week. Fears had circulated on social media of another imminent attack and created further panic among the general public. Owen arrived at Nova Investments' palatial office building and made his way into the lobby.
Owen Ballard, I have an appointment with Tom Neville.
The woman behind the counter revealed a kind smile and pressed a button on a switchboard.
Mr. Neville, I have a Mr. Ballard here to see you for his appointment. She glanced at him as she waited for a reply.
Thank you, sir. Upon ending the call, she turned her gaze back to Owen. You can head up to his office. The elevators are just... But Owen cut her off.
Thank you. I know where he's at.
He continued past the reception desk and stepped onto the elevator. Neville's office was located on the fifth floor, and Owen watched the numbers light up as he braced himself for what would be a harsh new reality. He arrived with an air of gravity and waited for permission to enter.
Owen, please come in.
Neville stirred from his executive chair of Swedish design.
I heard about Jay Merrick. I'm so sorry for your loss. I tried to call.
He took Owen's hand and pulled him into an embrace.
Thank you. It's been a difficult few days.
Owen pulled away.
I think we need to talk, Tom.
Of course. Have a seat.
Neville moved back to his chair.
I can only surmise what this is about.
Owen took his seat and assumed a confrontational stance. Folded arms, chin up. He wanted to convey a message of strength.
As I'm sure you can imagine, Argus Solutions has suffered a great loss, and I have lost a good friend and a colleague. As a result, I think our arrangement will need to be put on hold indefinitely. Given that your organization has experienced a tragic loss as well, there will be scrutiny on both sides. Our contract is new and probably will be reviewed. After all, while this points to a terrorist attack, the FBI will not overlook the cybersecurity measures Nova Investment had in place, and that will point them to Argus.
Owen, you're missing something very crucial in your argument, Neville began, and that is nothing of our arrangement is even remotely tied to what's happened. Now, I'm sure you are just having survivor's guilt, but I think you need to take a step back and look at the big picture. One of our malls was hit, presumably in a terrorist attack. The reason for that are the same as the reasons for all the other attacks, which have nothing to do with us.
Look, Tom, Owen began to shift in his chair. Maybe you're right, but to be honest, I can't risk it. I appreciate all you've done for me, but I'm afraid I can no longer reciprocate from this point forth. I have a family to consider.
Neville's expression hardened. I'll give you some time to reconsider your position. Things are chaotic at the moment, and any further dealings outside of the normal course of business might be noticed. So take some time. Mourn the loss of your friend, and you and I will reconvene at a point in the near future to review our options. Nova is going to be hit hard by this, financially, and someone will need to pay the price for that. Owen stood, adjusted his coat and tie, and turned to leave. But before exiting, he stopped and peered over his shoulder.
I wouldn't count on our situation being overlooked. You're forgetting one thing. The man who died, my friend, has a wife whose expertise lies in examining data for the FBI. And I know this woman to be particularly good at her job. She will find the truth.
Come on, sweetheart. You have to eat something. Lacey pushed the bowl of cereal closer to Olivia.
I'm not hungry. I want Daddy.
Olivia shoved the bowl, almost spilling its contents on the breakfast counter where she sat next to Jackson.
I'm never eating again.
Her head dropped to her hands and she sobbed again. Lacey closed her eyes and tried to contain her own emotions, but it didn't stop Jackson from joining in his sister's misery. Celeste swooped in and wrapped her arms around the children.
Why don't we go sit down and put on some cartoons for a while? I'm sure you'll want to eat a little later.
She glanced to Lacey with a thin-lipped, compassionate smile. Thank you, Lacey whispered. A welcomed distraction came in the form of an incoming call on her cell. So many calls had poured in, it was overwhelming, but the possibility that the caller could be her parents or Jay's propelled her to answer, and so she retrieved the phone. The number was unfamiliar, and a voice in her head demanded she still answer.
Hello? Is this Lacey Merrick?
The caller asked.
Yes, who is this?
This is Agent Will Kaysen. We met the other day.
Yes, of course, Agent Kaysen. What can I do for you?
I'm sorry to bother you, but you had asked me to look into your husband's belongings that may have made it through the blast.
That's right. Did you find something?
They did, yes. Could we meet?
Of course.
I don't mind coming to you. I'm sure you'd like to stay away from the office for the time being. Are you at home?
I am. I'll text you my address.
Great. I'll be there within the hour. Goodbye, Mrs. Merrick.
Lacey ended the call and texted her address to the agent. While relieved at the prospect that they had found Jay's laptop bag, it would be a painful reminder. Right now, there were plenty of those to go around. Her heart ached for her children. The reality hadn't even begun to settle in, but when it did, Lacey was doubtful she'd be prepared. She headed to the family room to check on the children.
I need to go and get dressed. Will you two be all right with Celeste for a few more minutes?
She had to ask because they'd been glued to her side for the past 48 hours, fearing she would leave them as their dad had.
Just hurry up, Mommy, Jackson replied. I will, sweetheart.
Lacey walked inside the steaming shower. Finally, she could free the tears that she'd held back so she could remain strong for her kids. Even if for a brief few minutes, she could release the anguish, the fear of the future, the pain of losing her lover and best friend. And so Lacey grieved. Upon stepping out from beneath the hot water, she reached for a towel and pressed it against her swollen face. Lacey made her way downstairs, wearing an expression that hid the truth of her pain. A brief glance into the family room revealed blank-faced children staring mindlessly at the television screen. Celeste nodded in her direction to suggest she had things under control, a small measure of comfort. The sound of an approaching car grew louder, and Lacey knew it could only be one person. Agent Kaysen had arrived precisely before the 9 a.m. hour. Lacey stepped outside and peered into the bright morning light as the agent pulled to a stop on the driveway. He adjusted his suit and ran a hand through his sandy blonde hair. He appeared anxious, uncomfortable about having to deal with a grieving widow, and so she was the first to speak to try to put him at ease. "Agent Kaysen, please come in."
"Good morning, Mrs. Merrick. How are you?"
He followed her inside. "I've been better, and please call me Lacey."
"Right, Lacey."
She led him into the kitchen. "Can I get you a cup of coffee?"
Lacey looked into his eyes and noted that he appeared to have had about the same amount of sleep as she had, which wasn't much.
"Yes, thank you."
Will sat down at the breakfast bar. "You mentioned you found something that belonged to my husband. Did you bring it?"
"No, it's in evidence at the moment. Well, some of it is, which is why I'm here, actually."
"Do you take cream and sugar?"
"One of each, please."
She placed the cup in front of him. "Was it his bag?" The agent sipped on the coffee.
"They found a laptop bag in the computer inside. There were some papers, but the blast turned most of them virtually to dust. There was a flash drive as well."
"Why are they keeping it? Why can't I have my husband's things?"
"Mrs. Merrick, were you aware that your husband's firm, Argus Solutions, provided cybersecurity for Nova Investments, the company that owns them all?"
"Yes. They weren't his client, though."
"From what I understand, the laptop belongs to the company, and while it should be returned to you soon, the FBI needs to do their due diligence because of the relationship between the companies. However, I've been informed that at first glance, the laptop appears to be damaged beyond repair, and so does the flash drive."
"Then why can't I have it back?"
"They're going to make another pass to see if anything is retrievable. Apparently, they've enlisted the help of your husband's supervisor."
"Then forgive me, Agent Kaysen. Why exactly are you here? I asked you to return Jay's belongings to me, and now you're telling me I can't have them until the FBI tries to pull whatever information they can from a computer that likely also has my and my husband's personal information on it."
Will reached into his coat pocket and retrieved a small box that was suspiciously similar to a Tiffany box.
"What's that?"
"I believe this is intended for you."
He slid it across the counter. "Pieces of a receipt were found. He may have been at the mall to buy this for you."
Lacey stared at the charred box. She didn't want to open it. She was afraid to open it. Her eyes couldn't leave the box, and her mouth became achingly dry. With trembling hands, she reached for it and opened the top, and inside were pristine diamond earrings, sparkling beneath the LED lighting above. "Oh, my God." Her voice cracked beneath the weight of her own guilt. "He was there because of me. He bought these for me."
The pain in her eyes forced Will to look away, ashamed to be a part of such a personal moment, but he soon returned his gaze.
"He must have loved you very much, Lacey. You can't blame yourself. He was there to buy something nice for his wife, as any loving husband would do."
Her head shook. "Thank you for bringing this to me, but if you don't mind, I really need to be alone. So if there's nothing else..."
Will was already on his feet.
"I understand."
He took a final sip of the coffee and began walking to the door.
"I'll be in touch very soon about the laptop. As I said, there isn't much hope it will be of use anyway. It's more of a formality at this point."
Lacey opened the door. "Thank you for coming by, Agent Kaysen."
"Ma'am?"
A brief nod, and Will proceeded to his car. The painful task of cleaning out Jay's office was one she could no longer put off. It had been almost a week. Lacey arrived at Argus Solutions to forlorn faces and condolences. However, it wasn't until she walked inside his office that their words pressed upon her shoulders and began to push her down into that place that made it difficult for her to come up for air. Looking at his office, she wondered about his daily comings and goings, his conversations, sales pitches to clients, his dealings with his team and his boss. In hindsight, Lacey didn't know who he was at this place, not since she left it, and that was her own fault. She rarely asked, having become so accustomed to talking about the kids
and whatever they had going on. Jobs and things weren't usually at the top of the list for their conversations, mostly because she was limited in what she could say anyway, and so it became a neglected topic. "Can I get you anything to drink?" Startled, Lacey turned to the man she knew to be Scott Voss, the vice president for sales for Argus and Jay's boss. "No, thank you. I'm fine." He moved in and placed a comforting hand on her arm. "I'm so sorry, Lacey. Jay was a good man and a hell of a salesman. We're all going to miss him." "Thank you. That's very kind of you to say." She dodged his gaze, feeling uneasy with the exchange. "I spoke to the FBI. They say Jay's company laptop was damaged, but they won't let me have it until they try to get into it. They said it was because Argus was contracted for internet security with Nova Investments. Do you know anything about this? Wouldn't they need permission from someone here?" "I've been leading that one, working to see if we can retrieve anything, but we aren't having much luck. Jay used that laptop for just about everything. I'm sure there are photos and personal files on there, too. I really don't want pictures of my kids being rifled through. Lacey, if, and that's a big if, anything is recovered, it will be virtually useless anyway. All the important documents are stored on our servers, so if the FBI wants to pursue information, they already have the authority to do so." Lacey considered for a moment her conversation with Jay. "What do you know about Nova Investments, Tom Neville?" Scott moved to the small seating area and hoisted his trousers to sit. "Just that he's the man in charge of awarding security contracts. Nova's a multi-billion-dollar subsidiary of Liwa Holdings in Dubai. To be honest, while they're one of our nation's largest commercial retail builders, they're not much more than a blip on the screen for their parent company. Liwa owns everything, from property to oil and gas facilities to banks. And, given the economic climate and the decline of big-box stores, Nova's seen some pretty steep decreases in revenue over the past few years." Lacey moved to join him. "And what about Tom Neville?" "So far as I know, he's the VP of cybersecurity. Been there about, oh, maybe 3 or 4 years. Other than that, I don't know much about him. You'd have to ask Owen Ballard. He's been chummy with him for a while, and especially since they signed with us." Lacey didn't want to tell him that Owen had made an unwelcomed early morning appearance at her house a few days ago. "Well, his things aren't going to pack themselves." Scott rose from the sofa. "I'll have someone bring you a box. Are you sure there's nothing I can do for you?" "I don't think so, but thanks. I know Jay loved working here, working for you. I'll keep you posted on the upcoming funeral arrangements." "Okay, then. Don't hesitate to call if you need anything at all, Lacey." He headed toward the door. "I'll leave you to it." She inhaled a deep breath, knowing it would take all her strength to get through this. Packing up his office belongings would not be nearly as difficult as packing up his things at home, but she wasn't ready to consider that just yet. "Hey," Owen tapped on the doorframe. "You need help with any of this?" "No. Thanks, Owen. I got it." He wasn't one for taking hints and continued inside.
"I'm really sorry for dropping in on you like I did the other morning. So soon after. Well, it was selfish of me, and I hope you'll accept my apology."
"It's okay. I know you meant well. If you don't mind, Owen, I'd like to get this over with and get back home to my kids."
"Oh, right. Yeah."
He cast his gaze across the office until his eyes landed on Jay's desk. A picture frame stood on one corner, and he seemed to be fixated on it. Lacey noticed and turned to the photo.
"What is it, Owen?"
"Nothing." He returned his attention to her. "I just wanted to come by and apologize for my behavior. Please let me know if I can help you, won't you?"
"Sure."
She smiled until he walked out and closed the door. Lacey began by opening Jay's desk drawers. Funny, though, because it made her feel disloyal. They might not have had the perfect marriage, but trust was never an issue between them, and so rifling through his things felt peculiar. Inside, she found the usual items. Pencils, pens, even a small calculator. Business cards and the like, all neatly organized. She had to smile because that was where their personalities diverged greatly. She was Oscar to his Felix, and it was a good thing they had Celeste.
"Mrs. Merrick."
A young man, probably an intern, entered.
"I was asked to bring you a few boxes."
He held 2 file boxes for her approval.
"Thank you. Please set them on the sofa, if you would."
She watched as a young man, white shirt and conservative tie, set them down. He smiled awkwardly and left the room. This was what she would expect in the coming days and weeks, that look of sadness mixed with pity.
It was the same look she recalled seeing on the faces of her mother's friends at the passing of her grandmother some 10 years ago. Lacey picked up the frame that Owen had looked upon so intently. She could recall the day that photo was taken just as clearly as if it had been yesterday. Yet it had been almost 3 years ago. A family vacation, Waikiki, one of the luxuries they could afford thanks to Jay's job. The children wore their tiny little wetsuit-like gear, covered almost head to toe. Lacey didn't mess around when it came to sunburns. And there she was with Jay, her head cocked, smiling wide beneath his arm. His face beamed with pride, and also a sunburn.
There you go.
The man handed Jay back his phone.
That should be a nice one for you.
I appreciate it. Thanks so much. Jay nodded to the man who was kind enough to take the photo. He turned back to the family.
So, where are we off to now? Anyone feel like an ice cream?
She traced her finger over Jay's smiling face and continued to examine the image. He was both beautiful and wretched at the same time. As she pressed the frame to her breast, Lacey felt something at the back of it. Turning it over, she noticed a fragment of what appeared to be a yellow sticky note peeking out. The backing was secured by clips, which she began to open. The note slipped out and fell onto the desk. It was folded over twice, and Lacey retrieved it. She unfurled the note, and on it, a number was written. On closer inspection, she saw it was a 12-digit number. This was not a number she recognized. Too long to be a phone number, too long to be a social security number. She considered why he would need to conceal this number, whatever meaning it had. It had to mean something.